So what are you supposed to do between each Engadget podcast? Wait in silence? I'm Matt Smith, and every morning I walk through the day's biggest tech stories. It's short, relevant, and ready for listening whenever you wake up. Find Engadget Morning Edition wherever you find your podcasts, or ask your smart speaker for the latest news from Engadget.
What's up, Internet, and welcome back to the Engadget Podcast. I'm Senior Editor Devendra Hardwar.
I'm Reviews Editor Sherlyn Lowe.
This week, Cyberpunk 2077 has finally arrived. And also, surprisingly, Apple has finally showed off their big over-the-ear headphones. These are some things we've been hearing about for a while. The AirPods Max, and we'll talk about some news that was kind of dropped last week that I think is really important. That's Warner's decision to drop all of their movies from 2021, all the WB movies, onto HBO Max at the same time they're hitting theaters. So it's going to be a fun discussion. As always, if you're enjoying the Engadget podcast, please be sure to subscribe to us on your podcatcher of choice. Leave us a review. Leave us a review on iTunes. And hey, if you want to drop us a note or something, you can email us at podcast@engadget.com. We typically live stream our recording of the show on Thursdays at 10 a.m. Eastern. You could join us to check out the live chat and ask us questions in between segments. Apple has finally given us noise-canceling over-the-ear headphones. It's the AirPods Max. And hey, yeah, this is something that's been rumored for very, very long. There was actually a story this week from a former Apple engineer who says they've been working on this for the past 4 years. So I'm not too surprised, but I am surprised by a couple of things. You know, they look very Apple-y, they look very sleek, but they cost $550. And I don't know, I feel like Apple is maybe pushing their premium design, their premium sensibility a little too much here, because I'm not really seeing much about these headphones that make them worth that much. But what are your first impressions, Sherlyn, of these things?
The fact that it comes in a carrying case that looks really incredibly strange, and I guess unique is the word, it spawned 1,000 memes, and I don't want to tell you what some people have called it, because I don't think it's all very X or R-rated or G-friendly, but
a bra is PG-13. Like, we could say it looks like a bra. I don't know.
Yeah, okay, it looks like
and many other things.
Carrier. Yeah. But that was not the first thing I thought. But anyway.
Interesting.
Now
I'm trying to think about what you were thinking. But yes, go ahead.
I was thinking butts. I saw butts. Yeah.
You're like Tina from Bob's Burgers. Everything is just butts. Yeah.
She's kind of my spirit animal.
She's great.
But yeah, the price definitely shocked me. At first, I was like, wow, $550 is like $200 more than most like over-ear headphones from premium brands like Sony. But then I was like, okay, wait, what else costs less than this? And I was like, okay, a PS5 costs less than this.
PS5, the Xbox Series X.
Xbox Series X.
Like a nice iPad Air.
Yeah, so many things are cheaper. So I mean, that just was ridiculous in my opinion. I don't know how Apple thinks it's going to compete with the likes of Sony in this space, but
they're not. Yeah.
You know this. You know them a bit better than I do, Dev. What were your thoughts?
I will say I'm a little confounded by all this because, hey, I love Sony's noise-canceling headphones. I reviewed the 1000 XM3s. Billy Steele reviewed the XM4s, which came out this year. In terms of like premium over-the-ear noise-canceling headphones, they're pretty much the best you can get on the market. And they typically sell between $350 on sale. Sometimes you could get a little cheaper, $350 to $400. I believe the actual retail price is $350. But that's kind of the baseline of what you'd expect for premium noise-canceling headphones. So Bose's latest headphones, they kind of owned that market for a while until Sony came in. Bose's also cost around the same price. And for me, I always felt like, man, it's really hard to recommend these things because who has over $300 to spend on headphones, right? And here comes Apple with something that's nearly twice as much. And at least on the specs front and on the features front, I can't see why it's nearly twice as much.
Right.
Because, you know, they produce a lot of things. This feels like classic Apple in the sense that they're producing something that seems over-designed to the point where it's kind of crazy. You know, I'm thinking of the article I wrote about the $1,000 monitor stand they announced a couple of years ago, which just seems so ridiculous. But in Apple's universe, you know, the idea of having something that's so precisely engineered makes sense. People will pay that money. But Let me give you guys some copy from Apple, because I think just the way they wrote about this thing.
This is why they think this is worth $550.
Yeah. The canopy spanning the headband is made from a breathable knit mesh, distributing weight to reduce on-head pressure. The stainless steel frame is wrapped with a soft-to-the-touch material for a remarkable combination of strength, flexibility, and comfort. These are features, by the way, like this is just me getting back into my own voice. They made headphones that are very specifically tuned to kind of be tightly held against your ears and produce a good seal. And those are all things you want in noise-canceling headphones. So, yeah, they seem very comfortable. And I think the fact that the top band flexes a bit, the fact that the foam ears kind of conform to your ears, that's all very nice. But at the end of the day, these are still wireless headphones, right? They're constrained by the fidelity of wireless. You're not getting magically better sound because it's coming from these Apple things. And actually, when they first announced them too, I was a little... In Apple's own PR, in their announcement, it says an iOS device or a Mac device is required to use these things. And like the AirPods, that's not entirely true. I feel like they're just bad at messaging. It's required if you want some of the like spatial audio features and some of the like special features from this. Otherwise, they will work as normal Bluetooth headsets. So there is that. You can also, after spending $550 on these things, you could spend like $35 for an extra cable, a USB-C to 3.5mm audio jack cable. You have to pay extra for that privilege, but that's how you can use these headphones on normal devices. So it is just everything I kind of hate about Apple's designs, honestly. Like the cost, the design, just it is not actually giving much to the consumers. And it's weird because I'm coming off of reviewing the MacBook Air M1, which I think is kind of a revolutionary device. It does so much for portable computing. It is just wild to me. And yeah, it reminds me of Johnny Ive's stuff just in the peak of his era, right? It doesn't use touch controls. It doesn't use normal physical controls.
It's cans and they don't have touch controls.
Well, touch controls are bad. And I actually think that's a good thing. But they're using the digital crown from the Apple Watch, which just seems like... Are they repurposing that? Will that actually work well? I don't quite know. I just find so much about this whole thing obscene. And then this is Apple. They own Beats. Beats, for the longest time, has been the company producing expensive over-the-ear headphones. Is this Super Beats? I don't know what you call this. Would you get these, Sherlyn?
No. First of all... I remember that I have covered more expensive headphones before.
Sure.
It is Montblanc, the luxury brand, made their own first true wireless headphones over ears, and those cost $600. So just a touch more, just about 10% more than the Apple, I guess, AirPods Max. As you were doing the dramatic reading, I wanted to see if I could take one.
You could take one. Go for it. You have the final two.
My ASMR rendition, not ASMR, my trying to be sultry rendition of Apple PR. Telescoping arms smoothly extend and stay where you set them for a consistent fit and seal. The beautifully anodized aluminum cups feature a revolutionary mechanism that allows each cup to rotate independently and balance pressure.
Amazing.
Those are just like $200 words for $5 sentences. Like, I don't understand. This is the whole premise, right? Like, these are $350 headphones in a $500 package or $550 package. So it's Apple being Apple, and they seem to be fighting with their own like in-house, I mean, Beats. Mm-hmm. That just I wonder if this is a sign that Beats as a brand may be going away. I don't think it will completely go away, but it feels like
they spent so much money to buy Beats, right?
Beats does have its brand recognition.
But I feel like I'm a little disappointed here because I kind of figured what they were doing, but I was thinking, hey, maybe Apple's going to go 400. Maybe they're going to go a bit above Sony, put on the Apple image. But no, they're going all the way. I mean, this thing's also actually, it's packed with tech too, right? There's an H1 chip on each bud, which seems like overkill to me. They say that helps with syncing. But to me, you do that with the AirPods because you can wear just one in your ear, right? So both that helps with one-sided hearing or one-sided wearing. You can't really just do that with a pair of cans. You can't just have, like, that's right. A weird thing where it's like
some people move one back, but yeah,
I hate that. I hate that so much. So anyway, I have a lot of feelings about this. I have not tested them. We're going to be trying them out soon. Probably Billy Steele trying that. Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say that. Yeah. I know we are, you know, on paper, it seems like appalling, but I'm pretty sure because it's Apple again, like once we start reviewing, testing these things, we're like, oh, actually these are pretty good, but still too expensive. You know what I mean? Like, I think we need to spend actual time with these products, we'll see.
I will say my feel about this is it's very much in line with the HomePods, right? Which launched as a really expensive wireless speaker, but without the stuff you expect from a device like that, right? There was no Spotify support. You could only use it with Apple Music. There's no Bluetooth. Still. This is at least a little more flexible, but the fact that you have to pay extra for the 3.5 millimeter cable just seems ridiculous to me. It's something meant for the Apple fans and the Apple faithful, and I'm sure people will buy this. They said it was sold out already, apparently. But I just, this is the side of Apple. Like, I like, Apple has many different faces. I'm a really big fan of the Apple that is pushing new boundaries and introducing new things to the industry. Like the M1 chip in the MacBook Air, and I'll talk a bit about that in the MacBook Pro, is fundamentally reshaping the entire industry. These things are very expensive, pretty headphones. And that kind of seems like all. But hey, maybe we can try them out soon and we can have a better sense of it. I think one thing you can expect is at least decent mic support and decent Siri support. Because that's what the AirPods are kind of built around, right? It's the idea that you can say, hey, Siri, and it'll wake up and do, you know, whatever you need to instantly without you hitting any buttons or doing anything. So that seamlessness for some Apple, you know, diehards may actually be pretty good. And since these are better headphones, probably will have better mic quality than, you know, the normal AirPods and AirPods Pro.
We'll see. Yeah. I mean, that's the whole thing of Apple and Apple, like, you, knowing it can win over its fans very easily. It's that whole ecosystem. They play so nicely together. It's like once you're in, you're kind of in. There's no really other better alternative for you because they can make the software speak so well across all devices. So I don't know. We'll see.
I think in Apple's favor, the one thing they really have going for them with the H1 chip is just the ease of pairing. Right, the ease of swapping between your devices from listening to something on your phone to hopping over to your Mac to hopping over to an iPad. That's all like stuff that's only really possible with the H1 chip. Because, hey, one constant annoyance for me with the Sony headphones or really any other headphones is if I want to go from my phone to my computer, I got to like disconnect it from my phone. I have to sync it to Bluetooth. It's always a whole process and it's not seamless. Apple, you're paying basically for the seamlessness of Apple's hardware. And I guess people are down with that. We'll have more to say about the AirPods Max in the coming weeks. Check out for our coverage, likely from Billy Steele at Engadget, because he reviews all of our headphones. Stay tuned, everybody. One thing that came in as we started planning this episode, we already had a very packed episode here with a whole bunch of stuff. We had AirPods to talk about. We're going to have all the big Warner Brothers news and everything and Cyberpunk. But then on Wednesday, 48 states and territories in the U.S., led by New York Attorney General Letitia James, issued antitrust charges against Facebook, saying that they've been anti-competitive for years. And the ultimate goal of what the FTC is aiming for here is to undo the acquisitions of Instagram, that $1 billion acquisition in 2012, which, by the way, sparked the entire unicorn trend, right? Before that, startups were not getting bought for $1 billion. I was working, you know, I was covering startups at that point, and we were all like, what the hell is happening here? Like, Facebook just has too much money. Instagram at that point was a company with like 12 or 13 employees. They weren't profitable. They didn't have a huge model, but Facebook was like, you're worth $1 billion. And then they topped that with WhatsApp in 2014 by spending $19 billion. And the argument here is that, let me just quote something from the FTC in the court documents. Mr. Zuckerberg recognized that by acquiring and controlling Instagram, Facebook would not only squelch the direct threat that Instagram posed, but also significantly hinder another firm from using photo sharing on mobile phones to gain popularity as a provider of personal social networking. Just as with Instagram, WhatsApp presented a powerful threat to Facebook's personal social networking monopoly, which Facebook targeted for acquisition rather than competition. So what seems to be happening here is that the government and a lot, like, more states than I could imagine really pushing Facebook against this anti-competitive behavior. A lot of them are basically blaming them for doing what Microsoft was doing in the 90s, and something that Microsoft got in trouble for either destroying competitors, stealing their ideas, or buying them before they could get too big. This is where things get a little sticky, right? Because Facebook's argument, and they issued a statement last night too, is that, hey, the FTC and the government approved these acquisitions. You can't just do a take backsies, right? And say, okay, we are bad. This shouldn't exist anymore. That seems like it sets a bad precedent for mergers and acquisitions in general. And I feel like companies may start to get worried about that. But at the same time, I think we've talked about this quite a bit. When the government would bring Facebook and tech giants in for hearings, there are legitimate issues. And tech is bigger than anybody expected. It has more power than anybody expected. And I think fundamentally, Facebook has shown time and time again that they are not good stewards of the data they collect, of the power they hold, you know, of the power they have over democracy and conversation and society in general. Trillin, any thoughts about what's going on here?
I mean, we've said before on this show that I've tried to quit Facebook and it's become impossible because I can quit the main Facebook app, but I can't with Instagram and WhatsApp being part of my life. Mm-hmm. The other thing that concerns me is when, like, you talk about the purchase of Instagram, but we forget, mm-hmm. or I don't know, I forgot, right? Facebook did make a bid for Snapchat, which was one of its competitors in the past before, and Snapchat just flat out refused, which, kudos, it's hard to just turn down money because we've seen what Facebook has done with Instagram. It's grown Instagram to, like, insane levels of popularity right now. They were right that valuation seems accurate back then, but look at what Facebook has since done with Snapchat and Instagram, right? It's basically pretty much stolen everything that Snapchat does. And is that, do we call that competition or do we call that, like, basically choking the life out of a smaller app? We don't know. Yep. And now
that's
like,
what Microsoft got in trouble for, by the way. Like, don't forget the whole Microsoft antitrust thing was around browsers, right? And the issue was around including Internet Explorer in your operating system. If you do that, There's no room for Netscape Navigator. There's no room for Opera to exist, you know, because who else would need another browser? And Microsoft got in a lot of trouble for that. It took a while for that to get resolved. Yeah.
Thankfully, though, you know, Microsoft had a real competitor in Chrome. And
that took forever, Shirley.
I know.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes, I agree. Netscape did go away. Opera and Mozilla have struggled to survive, but there's still at least one main competitor. I'm saying now, if we look at Facebook's space, it's hard to see that there's anything as big. I mean, TikTok is big, I guess, but I don't see Facebook not ripping. They've already ripped off TikTok, right?
Instagram Reels. And badly. I think the main thing here and the main argument that I can really get behind is that Facebook is fundamentally anti-competitive because there are other popular social networks, but there's none that's like Facebook, right? There's none where all of your family and friends are, where everybody's having conversations. You know, TikTok is its own separate thing. Snapchat is its own separate thing. You may have groups of friends in one thing, or you go to TikTok for entertainment, but it's not like a necessity that Facebook is for a lot of people because, you can't leave it if you want to talk to your family anymore. And there is nothing to compete with that, right? The Google Plus died. Google couldn't produce a significant competitor.
Google Plus
was the, like, one other competitor. They're dead. LinkedIn is a whole separate thing. LinkedIn's just jobs. Facebook has 2.7 billion users overall. That is a huge chunk of the world population. So I think this is the main thing. Yeah.
Do you see Twitter as a competitor to Facebook?
No. Like, Twitter is great at being part, like, it's a real-time conversation generator, and I spend all my time on Twitter. Twitter has its own issues, and we could talk about that. But I've always felt like Twitter was the ideal of what I wanted from the internet, right? Like, an ongoing, constant conversation. I could jump in, talk to people. I could reach people who are, you know, super famous and still have a conversation with them.
Right.
Everything's in real time. You kind of see the matrix in front of you. Facebook is just, it's Facebook, right? It is the thing where everybody's online identities are. You can find your old high school friends or whatever, find your family members and have chats with them. It is a very static thing. That's why they invested so much in Instagram. But, like, to what you were saying, Sherlyn, like, Chrome launched in 2008. And I feel like that is a decade after, you know, the government really started pushing Microsoft against Internet Explorer. In that time, Firefox launched and was, like, a popular thing among open source people. Opera was
I loved thing. Firefox.
Firefox was
Chrome,
great
yeah.
until it got yeah. too big for itself. Then Chrome became like the big popular dominant thing, and that was great for everybody. And that showed the power of competition. But I think the government was right to point out, like, hey, Microsoft, if you're pimping your own thing, it's really hard for anything else to survive. And Netscape Navigator, back in the day, that was the thing you had to pay for.
Poor thing.
I believe it was like $30 to $40. So, and Microsoft had this free browser in their OS. Who would pay for Netscape? That's the sort of anti-competitive behavior that was the issue back then. Now it's just, I think it's Facebook's complete size.
The other thing I wanted to say was, yes, there's a lot of things that Facebook is doing that are anti-competitive. But to your point, that I don't think that trying to undo the acquisitions of Instagram and WhatsApp really is the way to go.
Sure.
What are they going to do? Shop for a new owner? Are we going to sell it to Oracle again? Like, what's going to happen? I don't know.
This is it's new in certain territory. But I think
yeah.
the things you guys, everybody has to keep in mind is that Facebook has nearly 3 billion users. Facebook has more power and more money than most countries on this planet. And that's something somehow our government has to try to regulate. Like, that's the problem. And then meanwhile, by the way, we've talked about this during the congressional hearings. Typically, it's conservatives whining to these companies about how unfairly they're being treated. And then yeah. it's the Democrats and everybody else being like, well, these are the actual competitive issues. It is very funny to see them all kind of rally together in this like snowball of just hatred towards tech companies to produce this thing. But it seems messy. I don't think it's going to be a big, like, I don't think it's going to be a simple solution. But breaking up Facebook, if you go back and look at the history of Ma Bell, you know, the history of AT&T and how it kind of dominated everything and killed competition, it does seem like we're going to start to have these bigger conversations around these giant companies. And I don't know. I'm not a legal expert here. You know, I'm not a trade expert. But I do think I look at Facebook, I see a company that is getting way too big. I see it being led by a guy like Mark Zuckerberg, who has never really thought about, I don't think he ever has fully understood the power of his platform. He's always kind of denied it. Like, after the 2016 election, he spent a lot of time publicly saying, oh, no. We are not influencing anything here. But meanwhile, there are private stories of how internally they knew, you know, there were extremist groups. There was a lot of like fake news groups. They knew a lot of things happening on their platform. They didn't do much about it. That directly influenced the real world. To me, that's scary. I think overall, we're going to need some, you know, we need smarter government regulation. We need smarter oversight over tech. But that's a big thing. Like, that means we need a whole new wave of people in power who can actually judge these things properly. And yeah, that it just seems like this is a big move. It's going to be a big story for a very long time. And Facebook is going to fight it tooth and nail, right? Because Facebook's comment was basically, the FTC's charges are revisionist history. We made these brands so big, they wouldn't be big without us, which is technically true. But if you go look at stuff around some stories around Instagram, once it was integrated with Facebook, Sarah Friar's, her great book, No Filter, which talks about the entire Instagram-Facebook deal. Facebook did a lot to really keep Instagram down, too. Like, they really didn't want them to have free reign. They wanted, in a way, they bought Instagram so they could kind of control it and build their own Facebook photo product too, potentially to see if that would get bigger or not. It didn't. But that was kind of the anti-competitive part of what they were talking about there. What do you think, Shirlin? Like, do you think a company as big as Facebook needs to be reined in more?
I mean, I think the entire conglomerate of like big tech companies, right? Yeah. And Facebook in its response called out Microsoft, Google, Apple as its competitors. At first, I was like, really? Huh. And then yeah. I was like, you know what? In terms of scope, scale, yeah. I mean, sure. But it doesn't mean you're not mm-hmm. stifling competition in your space. The point we've made in this podcast several times now is that, yes, we need better regulation. We need people in power who know what they're talking about, who know how to, you know, go toe-to-toe with these tech titans. And also remember that they're not operating only domestically. These are mm-hmm. huge internationally, globally. So
yeah.
maybe it's some sort of international oversight board. Maybe it's that is,
We need a UN for multinational tech conglomerates. Oh, man. And because you look at like how well that's done.
Yeah, and you think about how the different countries have different regulations. Like, for example,
yeah.
Brazil's already said that, you know, Apple can't ship the phones without a charger in them, right? Mm-hmm. Like Brazil's recently in this week or last week announced that. So we have like different countries doing different things. And yes, the rules and international rules are always going to be tricky to navigate. But if we make it easier to, if like these companies have so much power, then all the countries can, you know, band together and have a lot of power. I don't know. I'm not a politician. Y'all decide how to run the world. But I'm just saying, there's other ways we got to be thinking about this. These are huge companies. These are global. Yeah. And so it's a huge issue.
2 points I want to bring up here. The FTC and the states and everybody who are really pushing against Facebook, they're saying the company has hurt consumers by squashing competition and hurting privacy too. Because don't forget, once Instagram came in, once WhatsApp came in, they were all just more data points for Facebook, right? It didn't take too long before Instagram just became something that linked you back to Facebook or brought it, you know, kind of start to cross-link stuff between Instagram and Facebook, which ruined the Instagram user experience too.
Yep.
And that's honestly kind of what allowed for newer, more innovative platforms like TikTok to come about, because they weren't saddled with the need to constantly be part of Facebook. It is,
right.
It's funny because Facebook is basically just replaying the Microsoft playbook here of getting too big, trying to bring everybody into the Borg, and becoming too big and not nimble or innovative enough because of that. Yeah, this is going to be an ongoing thing, but let us know what you guys think. Shoot us an email at podcastengadget.com, and we'll definitely be talking about this for a long time. And our next topic is something that dropped pretty much as soon as last week's episode landed, is that Warner Brothers announced that it's going to be premiering its entire slate of movies from 2021 on HBO Max. And I just want to say, first of all, I know I'm talking a lot in this episode. It is, I feel like I'm making up for last week's episode. Go back and listen to that.
For not being part of the fun.
Yeah, for not being part of the fun. But go back and listen to that one if you missed last week, because Sherlyn and Desconda did a great job of talking about, what was it, dating tips and advice for
what was
surviving
it?
Yes. Breakups online and everything with Dr. Nerdlove. That was a great chat. It was really fun. Be sure you take a listen to that. But this news, as somebody who's a cinephile, as somebody who I've been doing a movie review podcast since 2008, it kind of hit me in a surprising way, because we don't know if movie theaters are going to be safe next year. And I think that's what WB Warner Brothers is really betting on here. If they put these movies on HBO Max, a service that's kind of floundering, that is not as popular as Disney Plus, and doesn't have the same sort of fandom, that could generate more subscribers. That could get some value out of these movies. Even though they're not going to be making the big box office in the theaters, they are still going to be premiering some theaters. So the deal is all these movies, including The Suicide Squad, Matrix 4, I'm shocked by this, Dune, will be appearing on HBO Max for 1 month when they premiere at theaters. And that's some theaters across the US and theaters across the world too, I assume. But just 1 month. And then after that, those movies will go away and you'll be able to rent them or buy them or get the Blu-ray, you know, in a couple of months afterwards, as you normally do. But the idea here is that they're premiering on HBO Max. By the way, HBO Max, starting with Wonder Woman on Christmas Day, will support 4K and HDR and all the like fancy image tech I've wanted from them for so long. So the actual viewing experience will be pretty good at home too. First thoughts, Sherlyn, like, how do you feel about this as somebody who, you watch a ton of movies? I don't know how much of a theater goer you were in the before.
Right,
time,
exactly.
You watch a lot of movies.
I'm a big fan of watching things at home, in my friends' homes, that sort of thing. And this already solves one of my problems, which is whenever I go to like within my quarantine bubble, hang out with my friend, we don't know what to watch. So now that like there's things coming up, we can like, because we used to go to the theaters here in our neighborhood. We used to just go out like every other Sunday and just go watch a movie. Now it's like, okay, well, we're going to watch this week. And we've already planned for Christmas. We're going to watch Wonder Woman because excited is going to be released on HBO Max. And I have HBO Max and not Disney Plus, so I'm actually really glad it's happening on HBO Max. Obviously, like, however they negotiate, it worked out in HBO's favor. I do think we wondered if, you know, this year would be the, like, a hint of, like, what's to come for movie theaters in future, with the film industry having to slow down a lot of production as well because they just didn't know, you know, well, with lockdowns happening. So then now they don't have a lot of titles to fill theaters with.
Yeah.
Everything is just kind of slowing to a halt in the film industry. And maybe this is a way around it. Maybe this is, you know, a good way for Warner Media to drop it. I don't know. Everyone's at home. Sure, what else are they going
to
do?
I mean, everyone's at home. So here's, I think one criticism is that it's not like they had to really work out some stringent deals for these movies, because these are all movies Warner Brothers was distributing. So these are already part of their kind of suite of things, their, I don't know, portfolio of movies. There are arguments that they've basically been self-dealing because of this, because they didn't allow the filmmakers and the producers of all these movies to start negotiating deals with Netflix or Hulu or other platforms to see, like, would they pay more? There are legit arguments here, because there was a lot of reporting this week that Patty Jenkins and Gal Gadot were paid extra money. Like, they were paid, I think, around $10 million each to get Wonder Woman on HBO Max as sort of a way to... you know, make nice. It's make nice money because those are people who'd be making extra money off the box office of that movie, which would be earning over $1 billion most likely. You know, that's sort of a nice thing. HBO did not do that for any of these other movies. They didn't even tell, you know, the producers, the directors, the actors.
Yeah.
It was kind of a blindside moment. So Christopher Nolan, the very vocal, you know, director of the Dark Knight trilogy and everything in Tenet, he is a pro film guy. He was the guy pushing for Tenet to actually be released in theaters. And he hates this, unsurprisingly.
Of course.
And I get it. I get it, because he's a guy who cherishes the theatrical experience so much so that he dedicated himself to using the clunkiest and most difficult cameras and producing movies for IMAX screens, which only a few people could access. This guy always wanted to do movies the hard way, and that's what he loves. I do think part of his argument falls apart because Warner Brothers really wanted to make him happy with Tenet, so proceeded to launch that movie in theaters in, what was it, September or August?
Mm-hmm.
In the middle of a global pandemic.
Yes.
Yeah, it was, they basically had a traditional launch with that movie. It kind of died at the box office because, reminder, things are not good. Nobody's going to movie theaters. And that strategy just didn't work out. So I do feel like Warner Brothers and Warner Media are just doing the complete opposite strategy of where they just put everything on streaming at the beginning, see how that kind of helps HBO Max, and maybe they could get some value out of that. As you know, as a consumer, yeah, I want to see these movies. I don't want to go to theaters until there's a vaccine, until things are safe.
Yeah.
A lot of people are talking about this as a potential, like, oh no, this is the death of cinema. I do wonder if this is more like the death of movie going in a sense as we have it, like especially multiplexes, because I don't know. I'm old enough to remember a world without, you know, giant theaters with like 15 to 20 screens. I grew up in Hartford, Connecticut. We didn't get like a multiplex until 1998 or 99 or something, you know? So a lot of times when I had to go to movies, there were smaller theaters, you know, things with like two or three screens. There weren't really indie theaters back then, but there were smaller theaters. I do feel like we'll kind of go back to that. Maybe we'll see some of the Movie Palace, the beautiful giant theaters, kind of come back, which it would just have like one screen and screen, you know, screen things that people will actually want to see rather than the giant multiplexes. I wouldn't feel too bad if multiplexes go away, but I hope theater going and cinema going survives in some form, right? Because we're all going to miss that communal experience after lockdown and after all of this.
I mean, yes, I'm going to miss being in a, like, you've written about this before, but missing being in the same space with people while we're all reacting to the same things unfold on TV, everyone's screaming or laughing at the same time.
Sherlyn, didn't we see Avengers Endgame?
Oh my God,
together. Okay. And the visceral, I will always remember Sherlyn just like gripping my arm as people were dying and superheroes were like
crying.
Yeah, Sherlyn was very emotional about this movie, and I wouldn't have that experience if we were just like watching it at home or something. Like, I feel like it's a very different thing. You were part of the crowd, Sherlyn.
I was. I think that I felt
people were crying. People were crying all around us. Yeah.
Yeah. People were reacting. I think I got caught up with everyone else's emotions. I'm an empath. Yeah. So I get caught up with people's emotions. And I like was just like, Captain America lifted Thor, Mjolnir? What?
Mjolnir?
And then just started crying.
Yeah.
But yes, I agree with you. I think I will be sad if that goes away forever. I don't think it is going away forever.
Can't be
but
forever.
It won't be. But I am also a little bit of like a germ phobe, right? So okay, I'm not going to miss being like in a packed room having to like breathe everyone else's air or breath or whatever. The one thing I wanted to say too, which is why part of the thing I'm glad about HBO Max releasing all of these Warner Brothers movies or films, is that they don't seem to be doing the Disney Plus thing with Mulan, where they're going to charge you an extra fee on top of the streaming subscription you're already paying. So that's something that I'm thankful for. I know it doesn't do the movie industry a lot of good. It depends on obviously what HBO Max is paying Warner, but to your point, right? It doesn't seem
well,
to be
well. No,
paying
HBO Max is Warner.
To,
that's the thing. They don't pay anything, right? Because it's
they're just releasing it through their streaming thing. So
and they get all the benefit.
Not,
yeah,
right. They're reaping in whatever else they're reaping from these films releasing on their own streaming service. So we'll see. But yeah, I it's true. When I'm watching with like two friends in front of a in a tiny living room, definitely I don't think I was going to cry about Captain America lifting Mjolnir.
But it's the thing, like, think about, I don't know. I know most people don't go to the theater as much as I do, but hey, I do a movie podcast. Typically every year I will be at a theater, you know, over 50 times a year to see individual movies and different things. Even when it's not a huge crowd, if it's a small crowd in indie theaters, I love to sit in the front row at BAM in Brooklyn. It's my favorite spot. Oh. And just hear the entire crowd behind me. Because if it's a sad movie, it's a very moving movie, you kind of feel the energy of the crowd. We're social animals. You know, we want these things. And I think Steven Soderbergh, the director, made a really good point where he is a guy who's always like trying to push digital video and trying to like try new ideas. So he's a lot more innovative than Mr. Christopher Nolan. But Soderbergh is basically saying there are a ton of companies who have built their entire business model around these potentially $1 billion releases, right? And you can only get that by putting movies in theaters, making people buy tickets, having people buy concessions to support the actual movie theaters. That whole thing only, you know, that mechanism already exists. And maybe it won't be as big and powerful as it was after the pandemic, but as it was before. But I do think so many companies have invested in this. Like Disney, basically for the last decade, has just been producing billion-dollar hit. And no matter what you do on streaming, you're never going to get that, right?
Yeah.
And that's a downside for these companies. It's a plus for consumers, but yeah.
They start putting ads on movies, which I really don't want to.
No,
so
shut up. Don't
even
talk about this.
I know.
Don't give them ideas, Sherlyn.
I don't want to. Please don't. I will stop watching your movies if you put advertisements and all commercials on them.
Sounds like somebody has not watched a movie on Crackle yet. Sony's
I have.
Crackle.
I have. And Tubi. Tubi is the same. Crackle? Oh. Didn't Crackle die? Tubi.
I think Crackle.
Pluto TV, Sling TV. There's so many free to watch. IMDb TV.
Roku TV. Man. Yeah.
Yep.
If you don't mind ads, you'll have a lot of free movies, you know, that you can check out. CD Projekt Red announced Cyberpunk 2077 in 2012. We saw a trailer, a teaser, in 2013. And since then, I feel like the entire gaming world has been waiting eagerly for this thing. Joining us to talk about it is Jessica Condit, our senior editor, and also video game expert who reviewed it for us in Gadget. Hey, Jess.
Hello.
Was it worth the wait for you?
It was. So Cyberpunk is good. Like, straight up, that's just my takeaway. Okay. It's like I don't want to say it's fine because it's better than fine.
It's better than fine.
I don't want to say I don't want to say it's great though because it's not quite like it doesn't stick out in my mind as something that really pulled me in, affected me in a way that I know I'm going to remember, you know, years down the line. It's just a solid game from a studio that really knows how to make a dense, good RPG. It's beautiful. And buggy, apparently, especially on consoles, as we're finding out.
A beautiful and buggy mess, yeah.
Beautiful and buggy mess, and that's kind of what it is.
How much?
You know, I have some issues.
How much time have you clocked in at this point, Jess?
About 20 hours still. I am in Cyberpunk overload at the moment. I need to step back. This is my last Cyberpunk thing for a while, I'm hoping.
Okay.
And then I'm going to be able to enjoy it just as a player, which is always the best part. Yeah,
that's great. I played the retail copy that just unlocked last night too, and I sat down. And it was kind of a fortuitous event because the baby went down just fine. My wife was just tired, so she wanted to just do other stuff. I was like, okay, I'm just gonna go play video games. And 5 hours later, I emerged from my basement. It was like, oh, I think I really like this game. Like, it is a very, it is a very immersive thing. It's buggy. It's messy. I have issues with like the writing because it's very like it's not great dialogue wise. But I'm very immersed in this world. It really reminds me, actually, of Deus Ex Human Revolution, which, like 2011, the Eidos game. I love that thing. I love that thing. I remember spending hours in that game, just really being immersed in the world. And this is basically that concept, you know, first person cyberpunky story with like hacking and augments you can add to yourself, but in an actual open world. So it's combining that plus like the huge expansive world of something like, you know,
Grand Theft Auto, I think is
Grand Theft Auto. It's very much Grand Theft Auto.
The size and everything. Yeah. And even the driving, the city. Mm-hmm. But like that, I think you touched on something important there is like, it's like Deus Ex.
Yes.
It's like Blade Runner. Mm-hmm. It's like John Wick. It's like Old Boy, even. Like, I felt some Old Boy vibes personally.
Yeah, I love Old Boy. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's, you know, that's mm-hmm. a good touchstone for anything. So, like, again, it's referencing and it's building on this foundation that's very cool and very established. It is not necessarily an innovative, it's not changing the cyberpunk genre in any way. But again, hey, it's called cyberpunk. Mm-hmm. It's pretty classic. And they really did deliver that. It's a 1980s version of the future, mm-hmm. Just kind of expanded out from a you know, 2000s perspective. Mm-hmm. It's an interesting, see, like you said, dialogue you didn't really like. I actually love the dialogue.
There's some good stuff,
Yeah, I think the mood that they set in this game is really cool. There's some scenes that are truly beautiful, like one-on-one interactions with characters, especially mm-hmm. Where they really get the lighting right. The acting is solid. The acting in this game is great, I think. Mm-hmm.
It does feel like you're in a movie, right? Because every conversation is fully voiced. Like it is, at least the main conversations and the missions and the story stuff is all pretty immersive. I think you start to break those lines once you step outside of that and start to talk to people like in rooms. You know, every room, every street is widely populated. But if you stand up to people and try to talk to them, it's just like, hey, get out of my way. Who are you?
Yeah,
it's very like one dimensional in that way. I also want to bring up Watch Dogs here because I also thought quite a lot about like the way Watch Dogs works and the way you can just hack everything in the world, take over cameras, take over, you know, attack the augments people have or things people have on their bodies. It is too bad for Watch Dog Legion, which also came out a couple weeks ago and a game I put a couple hours into because I like that franchise. But I'm playing this and I'm like, oh, this is full. Like this is much more mature and evolved. It's not like pushing things forward in a major way, but it is so refined and so polished. I'll say I'm playing it on, I'm testing out the NVIDIA RTX 3060 Ti right now, the more affordable GPU. And it's running fine too. Like it's running fine with ray tracing. I have an ultra wide monitor, so I'm playing it like 3440 by 1400, I believe, with ray tracing and like NVIDIA's DLSS stuff, which really helps because that renders the game at a lower resolution, uses AI to kind of display it at a higher resolution, basically decent performance. So I can run it between 50 and 60 FPS on my system, and that's great with ray tracing. I know, mm-hmm. I don't know what your experience has been so far performance-wise, Jess.
Yeah, so I'm playing, I have a 2070, mm-hmm. RTX 2070, and I have to run it on pretty low like ray tracing settings. I can put ray tracing on, but I'm not maxing anything out. And it runs fine. I had one crash that like legit the game just stopped working. I had to restart. And I've had a few other bugs, you know, but it's been patched since I've had my review copy. And I think the patch that you have is different than the one I had. Mm. I had to re-download a different patch.
So I did the preload. I started preloading over GOG. Is that just GOG? But I started preloading over GOG on Wednesday, right? Or Tuesday. And then Wednesday, midday, another 10 gigabyte file just came in automatically. So I assume that was the thing. And it wasn't as buggy as a lot of reviews were saying, because I read so many things where things were just like fundamentally broken. But I do encounter some instances where things are just like weird and wild. Trillin, have you mm-hmm. seen any footage of this game? Like, is this
so
something
much.
You want to dive into? It looks beautiful.
Okay, so one of the people on our video team, Julio, live streamed some of it yesterday on his Twitch account. And he also shouts out, by the way, that the dialogue is great. I just watched part of the building a character bit, which I read your review, Jess, and I know we should talk a little bit about that. But like, it seems super customizable. And is Keanu Reeves actually in this? Because I've mm-hmm. seen the memes.
Oh, is he in it?
Yes, he is. Oh, he's in it, man.
He is
okay.
A major character. Yeah.
It's cool. Yeah.
That's awesome because I thought it was just someone who built a character who looked like Keanu Reeves and just was running about playing. But I mean, that seems really great. I do want, though, because this is giving me, okay, so this is showing again the sort of games I play. But this is
there solitaire in Cyberpunk? I think that's all Sherlyn was.
This is reminding me of the games I used to play on my really shitty old PCs in the past, which is CSI. The CSI games. Oh man, those were so great.
It is very CSI-y. Yeah.
Yeah, I want a cyberpunk version of CSI. I'm sorry.
Oh man. Well, okay, I have a game for you.
Nancy Drew murder mystery. Yeah.
Oh, no. Yeah. You want to play, and everyone, if you're looking for a sci-fi game to like actually immerse you in a world, like innovate on the genre, Disco Elysium. That's the RPG for you.
So
play Disco Elysium. Yeah. Don't
is it mystery solving? Can I look for clues?
You're a detective. It's great. You're going to love it. Oh, yeah. Like, it's very, very sneaky, very investigative.
It's an adventure game that is mostly reading and clicking. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot of reading.
Back to Cyberpunk, the character building or building your avatar, Jess, what did you think about that?
Yeah, so actually the character creation system I had a lot of fun with. I spent a lot of time making my character, which is the sign of a good character generator. So they have a lot of customization features. You can choose a male body or a female body. Like those are the defaults. And then you go in. And the thing that I really liked about it was just the depth that was available. You can change your nails, your teeth, your nipple size, your genitals. You can add
multiple genital choices,
like,
apparently.
You can change you can change the size. Mm-hmm. It's nice. I appreciate that kind of detail in a character editor.
Yeah.
The one thing that I did have an issue with in the character editor was the voice options. It was just a strange choice, especially for a piece of speculative fiction. They only have basically a male or a female voice option. And they kind of just ignore the idea of a non-binary or a they or them kind of approach. Not saying the voice needs to be different, but just the idea that in the dialogue, you can't have that option to be non-binary. In this world, that includes so many other details that are specific to this future that has been built out and has evolved from this place. And the idea that we have like cellular implant shards in the back of our head, but we don't have they or them pronouns. kind of like doesn't really sit well in terms of consistency or world building to me. And it's especially sticks out to me because CD Projekt Red has a history of really not taking transgender and non-binary and gender fluid people's concerns seriously when it comes to the stuff that they're putting in this game. Seems like they haven't earned the right to have like the advertisement that they have that is a bit exploitative and transphobic.
Yeah, they'll use trans identities for set dressing, basically, but not to actively engage and let you be one of those characters. One thing that was also really weird about the character generator, too, is that you have all these options. You have so much customization. You have one type of body build.
Right.
Basically, like you can either be like a very skinny, muscular female character or like a bulky, muscular man. And that's it. Like, it's not great for, you know, if somebody wants to play a maybe heavier character or something, like somebody who wants to play a character that looks like them. This is not really the game for you. It's all about idealized, you know, cyberpunk protagonist. You want somebody that's cool looking, it's muscular and skinny and can kick some ass. I found that really funny that's one thing that was, how hard is that? Because it's not like you're seeing your character model very much. You see yourself in a mirror once in a while. And the mirrors are funny too, because they're like digital. So you have to go up to a mirror and hit a button and be like, oh, mirror, turn on. Because that's the sort of like shitty future I believe we will probably get into. You know, a smart device that's actually harder to use than the mirrors that have existed for thousands of years. So that detail is funny also because it saves on game rendering and everything, so they don't have to deal with as many reflections. But that's the only time you see your character, you know, like occasionally.
Unless you're
person.
Like on the bike.
On a bike,
you can, like, get on Jackie's bike. But like, no, it's not a ton. You're in first person. So like you just see hands usually. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that. I do like the detail they have, like all the wires and the, like, they really put thought, and they definitely were building out a realistic futuristic world, near future science fiction. And so, like, it just, when they don't do it in certain aspects, it feels like, why? Why didn't you do it there too?
Part of it to me feels like it's like futurism and cyberpunk as aesthetic and not as like anything meaningful either too, right? Because it's not, I'm a big fan of Ghost in the Shell. You know, it's not really something where people are wrestling with their sense of identity and what these augments mean to them and how they define their humanity. Even though I know that is actually a big part of the actual cyberpunk tabletop game too, you know, created by Mike Pondsmith. Like that, the idea of wrestling with your humanity has always been at the core of what cyberpunk is. And this game's just like, well, it's, you got stuff in your face. You got stuff, you got wires. Wires are cool. Like, it's using them aesthetically in the way that some people use, like, piercings or tattoos. I don't know if it actually means anything to the characters, because they don't really reference it. It's just, like, the state of the world. And I guess that's the message they're going for, right? It's just, like, everything's kind of shitty, and look at this bad tech that is just making our lives worse. But it doesn't really comment on it, at least from what I've seen so far.
Which is what I was kind of hoping for, I think. Or maybe it's not that I even expected it. Like, I kind of knew this was going to be, you know, I saw a lot of previews of this game, and you can read all of them on Engadget. But like, it was clearly a Blade Runner, you know, inspired cyberpunk world. I was hoping for a little surprise, though. I was hoping for something that made me think a little more. I really like cyberpunk. I like thinking about these futures. That's why maybe I'm extra critical when they don't get it quite right. I think it is an interesting story in the end. But it's classic.
Yeah.
It's just not really saying much new.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
I think
go ahead.
It's funny that, like, you have so many customization options for so many things down to minor details, like the nail color and color of the blusher on your face or whatever. And for both genders or all genders, right? But then, the body build types are so limited, like Devendra pointed out. That's just definitely funny, because my experience with building my avatar mostly comes from Sims. And Sims lets you build as wide as you want, pretty much. So that to me seems like an interesting limitation, and the way they kind of want you to see yourself as you play this game. But I haven't played, so y'all, I don't know what that means to someone who's actually played that game. Like, does it make a huge difference? Like Jess said, you don't see yourself a lot in this,
It's a weird thing, because I think any first-person game, I want to, like, embody... If I'm building a character, I want it to at least reflect some vision I have of the character. Right. So, you know, I made a very cool cyberpunk tough fighting lady who has, like, a lot of cool features and whatnot and a cool hairdo, but not, like, the reflection that I really want to put into that world. Mm. It feels like part of it was just forced on me. And I think there's a difference. But playing a game like Dishonored or something, right, or a first-person action game where you're just playing one specific character, you have no character gen, you get into that character in a different way. But if you give me the prospect of character generation, at least, like, live up to it, you know, let me actually build something that looks more like I want to look. And maybe they can fix this down the line. It seems like a simple enough thing to kind of optimize. There are a lot of stories about the issues around this game, right? They've been basically in crunch mode for the past year, for the majority of the past year, even though CD Projekt Red said they weren't going to be doing that. The reality of building a game this big is that people have to work hard, and they have to work hard for very long. And that is not a way I want developers to live. So as a counterpoint, right, Halo Infinite just announced it's being delayed for a full year. We're not seeing Halo Infinite until next year, partially because they wanted the developers to have some downtime over the holidays. They wanted people to kind of have time to work on this thing and make it good. That's, you know, it's not great news for Halo and the Xbox overall, but it's something that's, like, very developer focused, because I think the world can live without another Halo game for a couple months. You know, let's make something actually truly innovative for a while. That's like the big thing hitting me here.
I think that's laudable. I would love to like chill on the news for a bit so I can take some time off, but okay, I guess not.
Yeah, it turns out, like, having time to think and not being overworked and burned out makes you produce better work.
Yeah. Huh.
Shocking. Well, and Halo needed some work.
Yeah.
From what we saw. So I'm glad that they're taking the time. I'm glad they're giving the developers the time to do it right and feel good about it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what we want.
Mm-hmm. Just you see Cyberpunk as a game you'll be spending more time in even after you, you know, end the main narrative? Or are you going to be digging around the world and looking at the corners and side stories and whatnot?
It's possible because, like, so I started playing it on PC. Mm-hmm. And I want to play it, though, on console. So I may start actually a new game. And mm-hmm. I may just do a whole new run through.
Very
and
nice.
Maybe, you know, start from a different place and very change nice. My background. Yes, Sherlyn, she's very excited.
Sherlyn's doing her frame.
Can you play online with friends? Can I play with you?
Aww.
Aww.
It's not that kind of
You can watch Jess's Twitch stream.
If you Jess can watch does me. That.
Yeah. I will, but please, I want to, like, create my character and go Jess's character on, like, a tour of Cyberpunk.
You want to be, like the annoying fairy on Jess's shoulder.
That's what I want.
Yeah, that's what me and Jess want, but...
Jess, have you tried, by the way, because I know... Are you playing on a laptop, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so have you tried plugging that into your TV and, like, plugging in a controller and doing it, like, as a console-like thing? Is that how you're doing it?
That's how I first tried to play, and the delay between my laptop and the TV screen was, like, too much to really make it work, and I couldn't figure out how to make it any less, so I ended up... But I did play with a controller. I didn't play with a keyboard and mouse. And
I
enjoy that.
I love... Yeah. I mean, this is a first-person game, and typically you think keyboard and mouse, but I like the controller feedback for driving, for other things. And also, you get vibration. You know, you get some feedback that you don't normally get with a keyboard and mouse. So, sorry, PC purists out there. But, yeah, that's the way it is. So, overall, you're enjoying it, though, Jess. I think that's our main takeaway here.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good. It's sexy. Like, it's, yeah, no, it, there are some issues, whatever, but it's a good game. I'm really enjoying it. And that's what I was trying to convey in my reviews. I know the fandom around this game is pretty strong. You know, like you said, it's highly anticipated. People have been waiting for this for 8 years. So have I. Like, I've really been excited about this game.
Yeah.
And that's why, like, CD Projekt Red knew what the issues were. And they've really created something. I think that's impressive. They should be proud of, you know, that's great. But obviously need some more work still. They need to clean out these bugs. In a year, this game is going to run great and it's going to be fine.
And I hope they add more content down the line to, like, optimize things a little, change up the character generation. I hope they actually acknowledge the issues people are bringing up because the way they've handled trans identity hasn't been great. And it's a weird thing too, because I think as a culture, you know, it's a touchy subject for a lot of people. Like Dave Chappelle, comedian I love very much, is still kind of shitty about that. And hey, I think we've got a lot of evolving to do as a culture, but it is kind of cool. I guess it is kind of interesting that this is a game that at least puts certain things front and center, even if it's not engaging with it. Maybe that's something, but I don't know if it's enough.
Yeah, the game can't just use trans identity as set dressing.
Yep.
You know, you have to actually, like you say, engage with it. You have to make it a part of the world in a meaningful way. I don't think the studio has done that. But maybe they can in the future. I have hope. I really do.
I hope so.
We just got to keep talking about it, you know?
Yeah, that's the thing. One thing I'll say here, too, is that I'm still waiting for the moment where, like, the writing really grabs me or really impresses me, too, because I couldn't... At this point, I put CD Projekt Red up there next to Rockstar in terms of companies that spend years producing these giant open-world things. And the thing about Rockstar is that for all the... You know, we criticize it quite a bit, and I think they're not great with a lot of topics, but... Sometimes, like, I think of, like, Grand Theft Auto 4 and how that was a really great story about the immigrant experience in America and the DLC in that. Like, sometimes the writing just kind of hits you in a certain way. Red Dead Redemption 2, not a huge spoiler there, but, you know, that's a game that's really about somebody who is dying. You know, it is playing somebody who is slowly dying, who's not just the badass Western guy. And I feel like that stuff, Rockstar tends to do well. I'm hoping for more of that from CD Projekt Red. Maybe as they produce more content or as they refine what's in this game. But yeah, I'm enjoying it. I think that's the main thing. I can't remember the last time I sat down and played a single game for 5 hours. And that says a lot that I was able to be, like, immersed in this world and lose track of time completely. So Jess, thank you for chatting about Cyberpunk. Where can we find you on the internet and anything you're working on in Gadget that we can look forward to?
Oh man, I'm working on everything. Yeah, so the Game Awards are tonight. This is Thursday, so I have a few embargoed stories that I'm working on for that.
Very cool.
And then there's going to be some other news I'm sure that I'll be very surprised by, and I'll have to scramble to write as that happens. I'm talking to some cool developers, so, you know, stay tuned for interviews. And you can find me on Twitter, at Jess Condit, C-O-N-D-I-T-T, and on Instagram, Jess L. Condit.
Cool. Thank you, Jess.
Yay! All right, so I haven't been playing any Cyberpunk, but there's a lot of work to be done. I think you have seen, I teased this up on the previous episode, I've been reviewing the Lenovo ThinkPad X1 Fold. It is the first foldable PC that you can buy, which, why? Why do you want to fold Windows? I don't know.
Let's just, but, what's your score? What? Just tell us your score, and I think we'll know how you feel.
I think it was 64.
64.
Out of 100, which is very low for us. We usually, like, an 80-something is a meh.
85, I feel like, is a average, good, like, you can buy this type of score.
Yeah.
64 is stay the hell away from this.
64 is, I don't think there's reason to buy this.
No.
And I really don't think there's reason to buy this because I have it with me here now. And it's, Windows is one of the biggest issues with this where, like, Windows is one of my biggest issues with it. Price is my second biggest issue with this. It's $2,600 to start.
With
that, you're just getting the tablet with the built-in kickstand. So you can either hook up your own keyboard and mouse and use it as like a screen or like an all-in-one but small, right? Like a 13-inch AIO. But otherwise, you're using it as a tablet. And Windows as a tablet, we all know, sucks. It's just completely terrible. There was so many glitches, not to mention all the glitches. It's like, I was frustrated. There's a lot of people in the industry that have reviewed it too that has similar issues. I couldn't go into every single glitch that came up in my review. There's just not enough words, not enough time. Mm-hmm. But like when I was switching orientations, for example, from landscape to portrait mode, all the apps I had, all the windows I had minimized to the taskbar would come up the second you like switch orientation. You can see this in the review video. We have it in the recording. It's just, why? I don't want to be bombarded by all the apps at once. So that went up. For more of our thoughts, you can check that out. And I can talk about this later on when we're talking to the live chat Q&A audience too. But right now, I am actually reviewing the Amazon Echo Frames. I haven't put on glasses in a long time. But these are cool. These are Amazon's Alexa-enabled frames. I accidentally said the wake word, so now. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And actually, they're surprisingly lightweight so far. Mm-hmm. I'm really liking them. And they have open-ear like audio projection, so you can hear music if you stream through them. You can also
Is it
hear
bone like conduction, or are they like little speakers?
No, it's it's more similar to Bose's Way, which is like it's projecting into your ear canal, the audio. And then there's a touch-sensitive panel. There's buttons on the bottom of the right arm to control volume and, like, answer questions or whatever. So far, I'm having fun with it, but I've only had it for a day. So stay tuned for the full review on that.
Cool.
And then I'm also working on putting together our best and worst of the year coverage. I would love our listeners and viewers to chime in and let me know what you thought were some of the best things in 2020 and some of the worst things in tech in 2020. Because we have our list, you know, we're
so many bad
working
things
on it.
Yeah.
So, well, there are actually surprisingly a lot more good things than there are bad things. Mm-hmm. So I'd love to hear everyone, like, if you have any ideas on some of the gadgets you thought were a spectacular fail this year or anything in tech, really. Social media, whatever. But yeah, it's a lot. Lots going on. There's no real rest from now until next November, with CES coming up and everything, and other stuff that I
next November
tell y'all just yet. Yeah, because it's like the only time I feel like I got any rest at all was Thanksgiving. So we'll see.
Oh man, maybe around Christmas we'll have some break, and then yeah, CES stuff is happening, and
Christmas time will be for CES planning. Honestly,
really?
It's already going on, but we'll see.
We'll see.
What are you working on?
I am. So we finally got in the M1 MacBook Pro. I already reviewed the MacBook Air. So just kind of putting this through its paces right now. It is weird because it is pretty much exactly the same as MacBook Air, which is a weird thing to say because it's the same processor. It is the same 8-core GPU too, which you have to spend a little more for like $1,250 MacBook Air to get that one. But benchmark-wise, like pretty identical. I think the things I've been reading and seeing from people is that since the MacBook Pro has active cooling, it has a fan, it should be able to do sustained workloads better than the MacBook Air. So like very long video rendering or 3D rendering, that's kind of why you'd get this. But it is a weird device. I need to like wrap my head around it because it still only has two USB-C ports.
Right.
You know, it is, it's functionally, it costs $200 more than the I think 250. It costs more than the MacBook Air as a base model, but you're not really getting that much more out of it aside from the fan. So it seems like it's in a weird spot right now. Yeah.
Yeah. I was hoping for more power out of it, but maybe not. I don't know.
It's the same. Like, it is the same chip and the benchmarks are identical. Like, the thing is, like, maybe it'll change for prolonged stuff, you know, for very long rendering, like I'm saying, but we'll see. I need to do more testing and kind of write this up. But hey, it's the chip is still good. I think the M1 is still very responsive. And for somebody who does maybe more work than, you know, if you want to do rendering often, if you do it several times a week, this may be worth the investment. Although I think for very, very hardcore users, you know, you'll probably be looking at the MacBook Pro 16-inch or the 13-inches with the Intel chips that can have more RAM and stuff. So you've got choices right now. I feel like this one sits in a weird place.
We'll wait for your full review then.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's move on to our pop culture picks for the week. I have a kind of a fun one because I've been watching a lot of movies and stuff, and you can check that out. But one of the most interesting things that happened this week is Dunkey, the video game YouTube commenter, put up a video called Why I'm Done Making Good Videos. And it is a, like, scathing indictment about the YouTube platform right now in terms of, like, this is a guy who writes really fun and funny videos, and he's been doing that for years, many, many years. But now YouTube is inundated with people who have, like, a team of, you know, video editors and people helping out. But there are people who are producing quick content, things around Fortnite, things around Among Us, things that aren't as insightful or funny, but they can get controversy and they can get YouTube hits better than Dunkey can. So he basically says, like, oh, yeah, I'm going to stop making good videos. And I'm just going to make, you know, crappy bad videos. So, like, the first one is, like, Drama Mondays. It's fine. Fine video game drama. And then for this entire week, he has produced those crappy, like, those.
Amazing.
The actual things he's pitching. There's, like, an Among Us thing. There is a thing where he's just commenting on somebody else's video in real time because that requires very, very little thought, I guess. It is just funny. I think it's a great commentary on where YouTube is right now. I like Dunkey quite a bit because he's a really creative and smart guy and a great commentary. Like, he's somebody who produces good commentary. So if you haven't watched him before, it's worth checking it out now. But I do want to say, like, I appreciate him pointing out, like, man, YouTube is just turning into this weird cesspool. It kind of always was. But it is funny how, like, the people who were producing good content that takes a while to produce, I'm thinking of people like Patrick Willems, who does some really good movie commentary, and he basically produces 30 to 45 minute movies on YouTube about his stuff. That is going away because quick hits, controversial hits matter more to the YouTube algorithm. This is the story of the internet. You know, this is what happened to the internet overall. It's just kind of sad to see. But yeah, shout out to Dunkey. I hope he continues to make good videos because his thing is basically like he's getting old. He cannot keep up with these teams of YouTube content hounds. And I hope he can find a way to keep working because I feel like he and so many other people, I'm feeling this too. This is what burnout feels like. You know, it feels like watching an entire industry move in a direction you don't like that requires so much work, and you kind of lose yourself as a part of it too. So shout out to Dunkey. I think he's pretty great. Sherlyn, what are you checking out?
I mean, I've checked out a lot of stuff that probably aren't suitable for recommending. But I mean, I watched The Happiest Season. It was pretty good.
I mean, that was really cute. I really like that.
Yeah. But no, my recommendations, I'm still trying to keep with science fiction. It's all I watch, really. And I'll start with Spectral, which is this film on Netflix right now. It was from 2016. I really enjoyed it. Like, I didn't expect, like, the blend of, and this is maybe because I haven't watched as many, like, I guess military-themed movies, but it's about these, like, I don't even know what part of the armed forces they are, but these soldiers that are in, I guess, I'm not sure if it's a real country. I don't really, didn't pay attention to the actual name. But they're in this, like, conflict zone, and they have these, like, otherworldly enemies that look like spectral projections, and they have to figure out how to get rid of that. And it's just, like, I just wasn't expecting it to be so good, and the plot moved really quickly. I was really wrapped up in it. I really enjoyed it. It's so weird because I find it hard to actually find good, like, gripping science fiction adventure type movies anymore that aren't, like, the big, grand, like, space movies, that sort of thing. So that is one of my recommendations. I'm sure you've heard of this, and you're going to be very surprised, Avindra, that I'm recommending this. I think you think it's good. This is Dirk Gently's Holistic Detective Agency.
Sure.
You approve? Have you seen
it? I mean,
it?
I've heard good things. I've not seen it yet, but I've heard
okay.
good things.
Okay, it's, yeah. Oh my gosh, it's so much fun. It's really good. It's the idea that, so Dirk Gently is this kind of human, maybe human, we don't know, kind of mysterious, kind of like a Doctor Who type yeah, of character, yeah. I think. And he goes around solving things holistically. And by holistic, they mean like the universe just kind of like guides you in the place that you want to, you should be in this,
okay.
and points you towards the crimes you need to solve and stuff like that. And just like everything sort of happens for a reason. And it's kind of strange. You're left to wonder. It also stars Elijah Wood, by the uh-huh. way, who's to me unrecognizable in this series, just because I just associate him so much with Frodo. But yeah, but he does really good in this series, and I just really enjoyed it. The storytelling is good, but sadly, only 2 seasons. It's on Hulu, but both seasons were a really great ride. I wish they had a chance to like kind of take it further, but they didn't. Yeah. I mean, there's more, and there's people. That's it's almost like a softer version of X-Men because there's people in there that have other abilities too, and it's kind of fun.
Soft boys X-Men, so yeah. I guess. I don't
soft, soft boys X-Men is maybe a good way to describe it, but yeah. So that's a light, like a kind of comedy take. Also, it's more lighthearted than something like I guess Spectral is. But yeah, I don't know. That's fun. There you go.
That's fun. It's very good. One quick recommendation because I didn't put this on the list, but I was thinking of you as I started watching The Flight Attendant on HBO Max.
Oh yeah, Kaylee Cuoco. I've heard
it,
so
yeah,
many things.
Kaylee Cuoco, and yeah, a show about traveling, and it really makes me miss traveling. It makes me miss
flying all over. Oh, I can't watch it then. Like,
yeah, it will make you miss traveling. I mean, the first episode is set in Bangkok, I believe. So yeah, it is a lot of like jet setting all over the world. People going to like great food markets and stuff. We didn't get to do this year, so it is fun to watch, but it makes me sad. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I miss the food from all over the world that I used to be able to eat. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we'll get there one day.
We'll be back at Computex one day, folks, and we'll all be living normal lives again, hopefully.
So that's it for our episode this week. Everyone, thank you as always for listening. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our very own Terrence O'Brien. The podcast is produced by Ben Elman. You can find Devendra online at
Devendra on Twitter, and I podcast about movies and TV at slashfilm.com. Be sure to check that out. Also, I was on the tested.com podcast this week talking about a lot of different things, all the major news, so be sure to check that out. That was me and Norm and Kashir's, and that was fun.
If you want to send me all your CSI-style game recommendations, I'm at Sherlyn Lowe on Twitter. Email us your thoughts at podcast@engadget.com. Leave us a review on iTunes, please, and subscribe on anything that gets podcasts, including Spotify. Captain America lifted Mjolnir?